and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm looking at the monsters I find therein. I'm talking about their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Before we begin, it's time for patron thanks. These are the people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. So in this episode, we're thanking a new patron, Steve Dempsey. Thanks for your support, Steve. So the first monster for today is the Lucrata. Now, the Lucrata is an interesting animal. It doesn't come up a lot in D&D. It is in various later editions of the game, but usually not given a very prominent place. And it is a monster from Greco-Roman literature. And if you've Googled it, you may find that there's not really anything other than D&D stuff, and that's because in the writings of classical authors, it's not called a Lucrata. It's sometimes called a Lucrocota, and sometimes it's just called the Crocota, which may mean something like a yellow color. So I guess then Lucrocota would mean, what, like white and yellow? I don't know. Anyway, it's also referred to sometimes as the Kynolikos, or dog wolf. And the description in the Monster Manual comes pretty much straight from Pliny the Elder's Natural History. So there's two entries, but there's one that it particularly follows. So here we go. The Lucrocota, swiftest of wild beasts, about the size of an ass, with a stag's haunches, a lion's neck, tail, and breast, badger's head, cloven hoof, mouth opening right back to the ears and ridges of bone in place of rows of teeth. This animal is reported to imitate the voices of human beings. And then in the later entry, he says, he's talking about hyenas and lionesses, and he says that when a male hyena and a female lion have a child, it's a Crocota. Which is maybe not the same as a Lucrocota, but then listen to what he says about it. The Crocota that mimics the voices of men and cattle. It has an unbroken ridge of bone in each jaw, forming a continuous tooth without any gum, which to prevent its being blunted by contact with the opposite jaw is shut up in a sort of case. Juba states that in Ethiopia the Manticora also mimics human speech. So all of the elements of the Lucrota are here in Pliny the Elder. Head of a badger, cloven hooves, doesn't mention the mouth that goes all the way back to the ears, but it does give it the bony ridges, the imitating a voice, and doing this to trick their prey. I don't know where the backward-kicking hoofs comes from. The original source seems to be a book called The Indica, which is by a Greek physician called, and I'm probably mispronouncing this, Ctesias or Ctesias, I don't know. Anyway, he was the personal physician to the king of Persia, and he collected a bunch of travelers' tales about India, and among them he mentions the Crocota, and he says it's said to imitate the human voice, but he doesn't give a physical description of it. It says it calls men by name at night and devour those who approach it. So the Lucrocota is sort of a trick, right? It lurks in the undergrowth, particularly at night, calls out your name. Now, the Monster Manual says that the Lucrocota is of average intelligence. Some ancient writers are a little skeptical. They think that it's really just imitating the sounds of voices to lure prey, but that it can't really talk. So the Lucrocota seems like an encounter that you get when someone goes missing. You know, someone has been lured away. Maybe someone that you need to talk to or someone who has something that you need. And then you go off and you find, you know, that person's voice being imitated. So you're lured away and then you get attacked. And then it turns out that the Lucrocota killed him. Or the Lucrota, as it's called in D&D. It sort of reminds me a bit of the Predator from the Predator movies, right? With its ability to mimic voices, maybe without necessarily understanding them. Yeah, so there you have it. And it survives into medieval art. There are medieval images of the Lucrocota or the Crocota. It doesn't have the same kind of purchase that other creatures like, you know, the manticore do. Some people think that the Lucrocota or the Crocota may be an attempt to describe the hyena, although many of these other writers also mention hyenas. In fact, the scientific name of the spotted hyena is Crocuta crocuta, which I think is named after the legendary Crocota. Both Aelian's On Animals and Natural History mention hyenas as being similar to Crocotas or Lucrocotas. But there's certainly the idea that they're, you know, they're kind of cat-like, kind of dog-like, that they are, you know, that they have a human-like sound, And that they are cunning scavengers seem to be shared things there. And you know I like hyenas. Yeah, the Lucrata seems kind of underused. It's sort of weird looking. I mean, maybe it's that, you know, composite imagery that meant it never really took off. I don't know. Anyway, but that's the Lucrata. It, you know, it's more of a, like, a minor encounter within a larger scenario. It obviously doesn't have the potential of our next monster, because our next monster is the Lich. Now, the Lich is, you know, a wizard who, in the attempt for immortality, has raised himself from the grave to become a powerful opponent. And to be honest, you know, with a lot of the kind of, like, the big monsters of Dungeons & Dragons, I'm gonna find that I don't have very much to say, because I feel like these creatures are adequately addressed. So, like, when we get to orcs, I don't necessarily know that I'm gonna have a lot to say about them, because, you know, orcs are great, they're fine, there's, you know, they're not underserved in any way by the material. And I kind of feel that way with the Lich, right? The Lich is basically a supervillain that is also a corruption or perversion of the natural order. You know, it's usually up to some kind of an evil scheme, and you gotta go and put a stop to it. Now, the name Lich is an interesting one. So, Lich is an old English word that just means dead body. And it seems to have been used by writers who wanted to, you know, just have kind of a fanciful way to say corpse. And they turn up a lot with that term sometimes in the kind of sword and sorcery fiction of the pulps. And then later on, Gygax himself said that he based it on The Sword of the Sorcerer, which is a story by Gardner Fox. I haven't read it. But it turns up, Clark Ashton Smith uses it, Lovecraft uses it, although in a slightly different context, but, you know, to mean an animated corpse. It also appears in the short story The Death of Halpin Fraser by Ambrose Bierce, which even says that doing this turns you evil, right? So even if you were a pretty decent person before, like whatever magical means that you use to bring you back to life, you wind up with this version of yourself that has none of your love and none of your principles, but only hatred. So there is one very brief mention in this entry of the phylactery, the Lich's phylactery. Again, we return to that idea of Dungeons & Dragons being a game that has quite a challenging vocabulary. You know, I don't know that when I was a kid, I would necessarily have known what a phylactery was, like a little container in which sacred writings are kept. Anyway, idea of hunting down and destroying the Lich's phylactery, which I don't think appears in this entry, just mentions that they have a phylactery. So maybe the phylactery is described in more detail in the DMG, I'm not sure. But if not, the idea that that's how you kill a Lich is by destroying the phylactery, has become, you know, a core part of its mythology in the game as it stands today. And I think that the reason for that is that it allows lower-level parties to have an interaction with this very powerful monster that isn't just getting murdered. Because these monsters are fun, everybody wants to fight like an evil skeleton and so on, you know, they are very, very strong, and so you're unlikely to be able to do that without getting killed, so instead it becomes like a quest to go find the phylactery and smash it with a hammer in order to foil the Lich's evil schemes, right? But Liches, they're great. There's a great image, they can fulfill a wide range of different roles, you know, they're knowledgeable, so you might wind up having to do a kind of deal with a devil thing to, you know, make a bargain with a Lich to get some of the information that it has, or you might be going to try and kill it because, you know, you're clerics and you hate that kind of thing. Or it might turn out to be the secret mastermind behind a scheme that you're trying to unravel, etc., 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 right? They're not just cool, powerful monsters, but they're also very versatile in terms of the types of scenarios that they can be involved in. So, Liches, real good. Okay, next up we have the lion. Lions are great. Lions are one of those animals that come freighted with a bunch of symbolic, kind of real-world associations. And those actually have very little to do with the behaviors of lions as animals. You know, the idea that the lion is the king of the beasts, you know, goes back to the Middle Ages, goes back earlier than that indeed, into the ancient world. But at the same time, prolonged contact with actual lions, which are not even the biggest and most powerful big cat, will give you the impression that they're basically giant lazy cats. Not that they're not dangerous, of course they are. I feel like if you're going to have an encounter with a lion in a game of Dungeons & Dragons, it needs to be kind of staged in some way, because the thing is that, I mentioned this before in the hippopotamus thing, but lion attacks on humans are relatively rare, precisely because humans don't spend a lot of time hanging around lions. So it's definitely something that a monarch of some kind might do, you know, have some lions hanging around, or you might get people who change into lions or things like that. But you're probably seldom going to just have an encounter with a lion in the savannah. Because it's a big place, unless you find yourself its prey for some reason. But again, most animals don't just go into a berserk fight, right? Even a full pride of lions, like, after you stab a couple of them with pikes, They might back off, or they might decide that it's them or you. I don't know, I'm not an expert on lion behavior. But I feel like lions are cool largely because of the symbolism that goes with them. One thing that really I feel is weird about this entry is that the mountain lion, which is not remotely a lion, is included, right? Like, it's just called a lion, and it's not even called a lion by everybody, right? It has a million different names. The mountain lion, of course, is the same cat as the cougar or the puma, and why it doesn't have its own entry, I mean, it just has nothing to do with lions. Europeans just called them lions because Europeans tended to take the names of animals from Europe, Asia, or Africa and apply them to North American animals as a kind of shorthand. Anyway, yeah, so that's a little weird. Categorization of animals in the Monster Manual is often a little bit approximate, and, you know, that's no big deal. So anyway, lions are fun because we have an idea of them as, you know, noble beasts, and we have a sense of how dangerous they are. You're probably going to encounter them in circumstances where they are there for that reason, right? These are the sacred lions of the temple of so-and-so, or, you know, look what a great king I am, I have pet lions. You're probably not going to randomly run into them in the savannah, because lions tend to hang out where there are not other interesting things. Although I suppose you could do a kind of, like, you know, if there were a civilization that had collapsed so long ago that its once fertile heartland was now just a bunch of grassy savannah, and, you know, that's where the lions kind of went to sleep through the heat of the day in this old, you know, tumble-down kind of Great Zimbabwe-looking kind of a structure. That could be kind of fun. So yeah, lions. They're a good value for money because they already mean a lot. And that's true of a lot of monsters in the Monster Manual, but not the Lucrata. All right, next time we're going to clear out a couple of L monsters. We're going to talk about lizards, lizard men, and possibly the Lokatha and the Lurker above. So join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thanks for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.